Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Tales from the Core. I've lost count what episode it is because we're not good at keeping count anyways, as we all learned in boot camp. But tonight, here with a couple guys from 3-6, Jeff Gaddis, which I think that's the first time in my life I've ever said your first fucking name, and Matt Talbot. They were a couple guys that were senior to me whenever I got to 3-6. Awesome dudes, and most of y'all know them. They don't really need an introduction. And what's up, guys?
Hello.
So I want to start off with like the same thing we did with Eunice and Garavito and everybody. Like, you're getting to 3-6. You're like, we're here at 3-6 experience. So I don't know if Talbot, you want to kick it off first since you're at the top screen for me?
Yeah. So I went to SOI probably, I think it was either late January or in February, and I got out of there like early March, like probably first week of March. And there was 3 or 4 of us that went to 3-6. And so we get over there, and of course, you have that initial reluctancy because you're going to a new place, like a new situation. It's the Fleet Marines. You're like, oh, man, you have no idea what to expect. You hear the stories, but you really don't know. I remember going through, getting dropped off in a van, going through the parking lot and just seeing the Marines in the barracks. Just, it was almost like when you see a prison movie now, when they're up top and they're like looking down, like fresh meat, here we go. And we head in, and initial introduction was all right. I remember going up to the company office, and we met. First off, let's establish the rules as to the name dropping situation.
If we're gonna talk shit,
So this isn't anything to deal with that. So I've already been established who this person was. So at the time, it was First Sergeant Bolton, and so we go into it was some room in the company headquarters on the second floor, and they had these little sheets on the table and welcome to 3-6 Lima Company, blah 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 blah. And I remember my first recollection of First Sergeant Bolton. He was pretty much the quintessential image of a Marine that I would expect, right?
Yeah.
Just squared away looking, just grizzled, just seasoned, just everything that you thought of in the appearance of a Marine. And then when he spoke, everything that he said, it reminded you of what you saw, the image that you imagined a Marine to be growing up. And so we got the spiel, we got sent off. And it was about that time, there was another guy that I got to close to the time. I don't know if he came in right before me or in the drop I got. I know he went to SOI before me, but Tiernan got dropped. And at the time, we had similar haircuts and stuff. And for whatever reason, people thought we looked similar.
Dude, I always thought that.
He has brown eyes, I have blue eyes. And for whatever reason, they thought we looked similar. But at the time, I remember he had a black eye. And that was how they ultimately distinguished the two of us. And to this day, Jeff may be able to shed some light on this, but I don't know what the true story was.
He says it was a doorknob.
It was a doorknob, but I don't know. So I don't know if anyone else has any information on that. Please get back to me on that, because I'd like to know the true story. Perhaps only Tiernan knows, but... But anyway, so that was my experience. And then shortly after that, I learned that 3-6 was part of the ET battalion at the time. And they anti-terrorism. I remember I was talking about that earlier. But so, and it just so happened that we were deploying to Cuba right after that. So that was like within 3 weeks of getting to 3-6, like we're on a plane to Cuba.
So you got there, that was March 03 then.
Right.
So Gaddis, you got there.
Yeah, before. It might have been 3 weeks. It was one SOI graduation off. I was alpha. So what were you? What did you?
I don't recall. Asked me actually yesterday.
I remember we were like, ooh, shit, new guys. We were so boo, we didn't give a shit. But yeah, it wasn't that way. We all became friends anyway because we're all in the same shithole together.
That was like the greatest feeling whenever you were booed as fuck. Yeah. And then 3 weeks later, new dudes come in.
The attention's off me.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
It was I thought looking forward to the next drop. Yeah.
I personally thought, man, like, I don't remember who was there because, like, you guys were all, like, none of you guys were there. I don't know if you were on leave after Cuba. Like I said, the only person I know that was there, I can remember, was Feliciano. I don't remember who received us at the company office. But, man, I do remember, like, getting that French Forge when you show up. And like, that's a pretty fucking cool moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are like the little details that this is so great. So I wanted to say too, Mike, thanks a lot. And Janine and everyone else involved that's been doing this. It's been fantastic. Like, listen, I have about an hour commute each way to work. I listen to them and it's just, it makes it fly by. And I was telling Janine earlier, it's just hearing these different stories from all the guys that we serve with. And like, you're familiar with that time frame, but you didn't necessarily hear that story. So it just like,
yeah,
pieces. It's great.
Dennis, you went to Kabul in 03, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to Talbot or were you with AP Hill?
Yeah, I went to Kabul. Yeah.
Okay, you were there. So you remember Kimball was there.
Oh, yeah.
So what's funny is Kimball and I were just messaging earlier today, and I told him, I said, dude, this is like so random. But one of my most vivid memories of you was plugging up your Xbox when we got over there and the thing blew up. And I'm super new, man. I'd only gotten there a month or so before we went. And I'm like, this man really brought a fucking Xbox to war. And he responded, he's like, dude, I totally forgot that even happened. And I was like, that's like the point of everything that we're doing is to be able to share different stories. Like you said, Matt, things that you didn't hear about that. Right. And so that's one of the things I'm looking forward to today is you guys were out there in Way City. And I know a lot of shit, dude. I've heard so many funny stories. I remember hearing about like our little Puerto Rican friend, like carrying back a television. And
oh yeah, I got lit up for that patrol.
We may or may not have photographic evidence of that incident.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you guys will have to dump all the incriminating stories to me in a text because he's coming down here with a couple other guys this weekend. Like a little makeshift reunion.
Freaking awesome. A Goya party.
Yeah. Yeah. The Koya, he messaged earlier and he's I'm concerned. He's because it's going to be you and then all of us Hispanic dudes. He's like, I don't want Border Patrol showing up. And then Ramirez texts, he's everybody just bring like their landscaping hats and stuff. And that way, if they show up, we'll get to work. Yeah. It's awesome. And another thing I said to Kimball, man, and not so much with you guys, because we were similar in time. And I know my peer group, guys like Liebrook, you got real close with because he was out there in Way City with you. But I understand the Marine Corps' the need and the policy for the no fraternization. But then it also sucks because I told Kimball, I said, man, here we are like 20 years later. And dudes like him, DeCamp, Harris, guys that like you weren't allowed to be friends with. And it's 20 years it takes.
Yeah. Right.
And then finally you get to talk to them and know them as like a person.
Right. Yeah. That's a huge element to it. It's exactly. It's like they were like, especially guys like Harris, like who I was in his platoon. I got to know as well as I could under the circumstance.
Yeah.
Cuba. And then shortly after that, we went to the embassy in Kabul. But after that, he was gone. And I was junior to him at the time where we had somewhat of a encounter relationship, but for the most part, I was junior, so I didn't ask too many questions or anything like that. I didn't try to get to know him because he was my superior, right? But yeah, again, to what you're saying, this is fantastic because it lets me see that side of him and vice versa. Because it wasn't,
filled a lot of void and gaps we weren't aware of. Yeah.
I think it was Harris shot me a message after Sylvester was on. And he's like, dude, I never knew how the names got picked. And I guess what?
It was me and you.
Yeah, that's right, because you were a DM, right?
I always wondered why the hell we were going up there, and like we were supposed to go to AP Hill that morning. They were like, everybody over here, you're going to AP Hill, you suck. Enjoy your training. If you're going over here, you're going to Afghanistan in 2 days. You're turning the barracks into an embassy. We're like, what? But, yeah, I was scared out of my mind, dude.
I know, man. That was AP Hill was my first, because I think I got there in September or something, and being fresh as fuck. Your parents, I'm sure like your parents when you guys went to Cuba, right? They're like, oh, even though it's not really that big of a deal. So my mom was like that with AP Hill because, you know, people die in training, which they do. So they have a little bit of concern. And I remember calling them up that morning and I was like, hey, I got good news and bad news. And they're like, my mom was like, what? And I was like, I'm not going to AP Hill. You don't have to worry about that anymore. And she's like, oh, okay. Oh, that's wonderful. I was like, but we're going to Afghanistan. Like, that was a haze fest.
It sucked,
man.
Because I just remember sleeping one night and I get woke up at 4:30 in the morning, somebody beating on all these doors. And this asshole named Sylvester showed up and Lum, and they were just like straight drill instructor mode. We're like, who the fuck are these dudes? And you see the corporal chevrons and shit, like, fuck, man, we had it so good for just a second. And these pit bulls showed up and they started rattling everything. And to hear Sylvester talk about how we all got chose, I had no clue. For years, I wanted to know why the hell I was chose out of just that small group. But it was pretty cool to hear him say that.
Yeah, I always wondered the same thing, too. It was funny is actually remember because I think I can't remember which one of you just said it. But yeah, we were in formation. They read off a list of names. And they said, if we read off your name, go see the XO. And I'm thinking, like, dude, I wasn't bad yet. I hadn't done anything. Like, I didn't even, like, drink. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do? What did I get roped into?
Yeah. Because I had been, like, meritoriously promoted to Lance, like, in Cuba. Damn, I thought I was doing well. Like, oh, what happened?
And, like, my friends, our friends started getting called off. I'm like, shit, I hang out with him. Like, what the fuck?
I'm like, dude, we're all guilty by association.
Yeah, that was, I will say, that was a cool experience to get over and go do that. And then talking about the things you forget, there was, and I guess I didn't really ever find out why I was picked, but I assume it had something to do with demo because Goyette went. And I don't remember if either of you guys went with us, but there was this old like 1980s Suburban that had to be deserialized. And so I got to climb around into the thing and lace it with C4 and blow it up and all that stuff. And dude, it was like 2010, 11, 12, something like that. I'm going through my shit. And here's like a certificate of appreciation from the United States Embassy in Kabul for providing a training experience and teaching people demo and blowing that thing up. And it's, dude, how do you forget that? Like, how the fuck do you forget? I didn't forget doing it. I just forgot the little certificate thing that they gave me.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. You never know. But sometimes things just slip your mind and you're just, that's again, going back to this is why this is great too. It brings up those like kind of recessed memories that you just, they weren't part of the big picture. So you didn't necessarily remember that little small detail, but this brings it back and it just takes you back to that moment. It's great.
Well, speaking of going back, so let's go back to the full Afghanistan deployment. So I was in, I'm almost 100% positive, I was in the hooch with Sylvester. Because I was with you guys, and I was with second the entire time. And where were you guys at? Do you remember? In Salerno?
Yeah, I remember being in the row. It was almost looked like the 440. Like if you looked at it aerially, like where our encampment was, and we had all the tents. We were like in the far right corner.
Like okay.
Closest to the shower
room. Yep. Yeah. Right by the showers.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, we were all in the same one. I remember Robertson. This is the fucking crazy guy, man. I've told this story like that to how many random like civilian people, but I remember one time specifically getting mortared, like indirect fire, whatever it was. And remember we had that little U-shaped concrete thing right next door. We'd go in there. I remember that motherfucker like running out, like yelling, "You fucking missed." Like wild, dude. The wild shit that people did, man.
I remember being at they had a nice gym there because they had, I think there was like, I'm pretty sure there was like an Army SF group there. So they had a good budget and they had it like, the base was, Salerno was like pretty hooked up.
It was.
Considering looking forward to Iraq, like it was definitely hooked up. So they had a nice gym there. And I would just remember like you'd be in the middle of a set or something and you hear like the rocket impact. And then you knew, like everybody looked at each other and you're like, just let me just finish the set real quick. Maybe not the first time it happened, but after that, when you got used to it, if you were in a chow line, you were like,
waiting on that dude.
I just take my chow tray to the bunker and just eat while I was in there. But the Army guys are looking at us like we're crazy. Like, you brought your food with you? Yeah. Fuck this
dude, especially if like you waited in line to get an omelet, because that took some time. Yeah. Like, I'm not, fuck. It's so funny. Like, it's counterintuitive to how like normal people behave. You're taking incoming fire and it's, dude, I don't want to get out of line. I want this omelet, right? Like, fucking standing here for 5 minutes. Yeah. What's, if you got like your top memory from the death march? What's your top memory from the death march?
Jeff, you want to start? You go ahead first.
Honestly, it was Bolton, and it was like Bolton hated me. Bolton was up my ass the entire time I was there. And I forget his name. I don't think it was Provost. It was another guy. He had a lazy eye. I can't remember. One Stanker was another guy. I can't remember his name. But like he ended up rolling his ankle towards the end. And we were all dead beat. And I ended up carrying his pack and my pack for the last 12 miles of that thing.
Damn.
And Bolton finally like respected me, came to me and told me that it was cool. I did that basically. And but before that, he fucking hated me, dude. He was always on my ass. I was the punchline to every fucking mean thing he ever said. Every formation, I caught it. Couldn't figure it out.
I remember when you guys remember when I think Pharrell rolled his ankle also.
Yeah.
And then someone got a hodge with a tractor or something.
Oh, yeah. They approached him and they paid him. I think they paid him $20 cash and he put him in the back of his truck.
I remember
carrying his pack for a while, too.
Was that the one where we ran out of water and we had to go barter with the villagers at the bottom for their well water?
So that was a weird second one that we did.
The second one?
You know, it's funny. Is that one like always gets overlooked, but I remember that. I remember we were up in the mountains again somewhere. Yeah, a group of guys went down to hit up the well, so because everybody ran out of fucking water.
And we were all using the iodine tablets, and we all got tired of it, so nobody was using it. And one guy, I won't say his name, but one guy got malaria out of the whole thing. One guy, and he still has problems with it today, from my understanding.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. Last name starts with an S.
Yes.
Yeah, dude, when we did a little get-together up in D.C. Arlington area back in 2012.
Yeah.
He was there. He came
out.
This
is crazy. All those people that drank from that thing, and he's the only one that caught that stuff.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Didn't he get like medically retired because of that? That's what I thought.
Monica, when I left with 3-6, we both left at the same time. We were instructors up there, but he was going through his illnesses, so I never even saw him. But yeah, it's pretty messed up.
It's fucking crazy.
I hope he's getting compensation for it. It's pretty jacked up.
Yeah. You imagine if he's speaking of compensation, we definitely. Maybe 10 more minutes, a little bit of storytelling, and then we'll jump into that stuff because I definitely don't want to skip over it. But
yeah.
So your top memory from the 04 death march.
So it's hard to narrow it down, right? Because that was a pretty epic journey. But again, I think it was a Bolton incident. I remember it was the last day, right? So we had already come out of the mountains, we were down in the lowlands. And we were coming up that wadi.
Yep.
And it was before that point where we could see the fob even, but it was earlier in the morning. And I remember just broke the fuck off, man. I was just like everybody else, just hurting. And guys were dropping left and right. And I remember Bolton and the CO at the time, I don't think his name has been established, so I won't say it, but nothing negative. But they were just walking up together through our giant staggered formation, and I overhear him, or at least I thought I may have been hallucinating at the time, but I hear him talking to the CO, and he's just, and this goes back, Mike, to an earlier episode when you were trying to establish how long he had been in at the time.
Yeah.
So I overhear him talking to the CO, and he's 18 years in the fucking Marine Corps. He's like, I've never done anything like this. And I just remember like thinking to myself, whoa, because going back to my first impression of the guy, I was like, damn, man, if I just went this whole time with that dude, and he just said that was one of the most difficult things he's done in the Marine Corps up till that point. I was like, all right. It made me feel like we had accomplished something. That was probably like my most memorable moment from that. But there's many other things that I can recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, as soon as we landed, you had dudes rolling their ankle. You had a negligent discharge.
Yeah. I want to say there was 4 medevacs within the first couple hours of that mission. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of like foot injuries or like rolled ankles or whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a super wild event. And I guess if I had to pick one of the best moments was definitely when we got back and we were all standing out in front, and it was Bolton, and the BC just caused all a bunch of pussies. And Bolton was like, I don't give a fuck what he has to say. He's like, you guys are some of the finest Marines. You know, he's like, show me another company in the Marine Corps that can do the shit that we just did. And I was like, He's the man. What a fucking awesome. We just went through literally, what, 5-6 days of unimaginable hell. I tell people,
sundown, it was misery.
between coming down from the mountains and then ending up in that wadi. Remember, we cut through that little town, and that's where they got the tractor for Pharrell. Mm-hmm. And I think I was talking to Janine. I think it was her I was telling the story to, that I remember coming. Dude, we looked so fucking bad that the little Haji kids were coming up, like offering to like help carry the pack and shit, or else they wanted to just take it and steal it. I don't know if they were trying to steal our shit or we just looked so bad that they wanted to like help in some capacity. But it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's possible. All of the above are possible, probably.
My wedding, June of 2018, Liebrook, Hunter Stow, a couple other guys were there. And I guess it was like the first night everybody showed up. And we're out on the beach, Carolina Beach, drinking some beers, telling stories. Hunter, like how Hunter says shit. And it's just funny. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's usually being like super serious. And somebody brought up the death march, like probably Liebrook, Stow, whoever. And Hunter's standing there. He's like, man, he's like, whenever I got left behind on that thing, he's like, I remember thinking
through the podcast. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I'm sitting there thinking, surely this won't be the one thing that happens in the Marine Corps that people talk about for the rest of their lives. And here we are, dude. 14 years later at your wedding, fucking talking about the death march. And when we showed up, he was like one of the first dudes I saw back in Houston. When we showed up at the airport and he looked at me, he's like, Francis, this is an Iraq reunion. He's like, no one better bring up the fucking death march.
Damn. Everybody's got that one thing that they don't want brought up, right? When we all get together, what's going to come? You'd rather.
Yeah, I did so much crap that I don't remember, probably because I was drunk, that I wouldn't be surprised if you guys said something right now. Oh, that sounds like me. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely something I would do. Yeah, it's so funny, man. Like Strong and I were on the phone last night talking. We were talking about the death march, and we were also talking about when Eunice had brought up the battalion NJP.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah.
And so I was asking Strong what his thoughts on that was. And it's interesting because, like Sylvester said, we all experienced a different version of the Marine Corps because we were all like post 9/11. And so when I brought that up to Strong, he's like, it's so interesting to hear your guys's, because that was Eunice's perspective of what kind of changed the behavior is holding people accountable with that battalion formation. And Strong was like, dude, that shit happened all the time, like back in the day, pre 9/11. And then we're going to get him on because he went through that span and he's got a lot of cool insight to how things changed and how the Marine Corps evolved. And dude, you talk about like shit that we don't remember. Do you remember those? I think they're called PASS 13s. Mm-hmm.
Anyone
would remember is Jeff.
We'll get into that.
Well, it sounds like there's a story I don't fucking know.
Oh, so, you want to talk all night?
He brought that up, and I totally forgot those things existed. And he was telling me, like General Krulak, and his number one thing was to modernize the Marine Corps. Right, because they truly were using back in 95 like shit from Korea, Vietnam, World War II.
It was called, yeah.
Yeah. And so he was talking about all the money that got allocated. They would give like the battalion commander $3 million. And that's where we got the Wiley X's, the Oakleys, like the shit that we went to our supply for versus going to SIF. Just tons of shit, man, that I never knew. And because of the relationship that the post, we couldn't ever have this relationship in, like in the Marine Corps, like we're talking about, but now afterwards learning all this stuff. And it's, dude, I just got to bring him on to talk about it. But the past 13s was something he brought up. It was just spend money. He was telling us, it's kind of funny. I remember somebody giving me the satellite, the SATCOM. And he's, no one taught you how to use shit. They just gave it to you because we had it. They're like, here, put this on your saw. Here, fucking use this SATCOM. He's like, I don't know how to fuck to use this thing. Like,
yeah, that happens quite a bit. When they have money, what happens if they don't expend, you know, the money they're given, then the budget will get slashed.
Yeah, you get less next year.
Come the end of that cycle, that fiscal year or whatever, they're blowing all that money.
But I'm intrigued now. I got to hear what's up. I got to hear about this past 13.
All right. Before we went to Iraq, we had a certain sergeant that got dropped into us. He was a Gulf War era guy that came back from the Marine Corps because of the war. So he didn't know anything about infantry. And a matter of fact, I think he was a weatherman or something. He used to shoot weather balloons up or something.
Know exactly who you're talking about.
So
yep.
Immediately, my squad was like the punchline of jokes because it was like Storm Team 5 and the weather trackers and all this shit. Yeah, we were not taken serious at all. So his problem was he didn't want to listen. You know, you had guys, whether they were lances, PFCs, or corporals, they had been to like three wars already. He didn't want to listen to anybody. So people would try to tell him stuff. He carried the same attitude when we actually got to Iraq. And same kind of stuff was going on over there. I don't know if you guys remember, we were all at Gannon and we were about to step off for Steel Curtain. They had us all staged up on the front row to head towards the town. But we were already at the ING. I think, Tabo, were you guys out there too? Yeah, because we got the picture together. Yeah. We're all staged out there and each squad leader had a brief they had to give their squad. So Wilcox gave his and this guy gave ours. And the brief for our guys were, hey, we need to leave this here, and some of the items, one of them was the PAS 13. We have to leave it on this post up at the ING because HEQ is going to come in and backfill our post and we push on to take the city. He did his EDL and he took off. It was Samuel, his PAS 13 off his saw. And we're like, all right, if you got the EDL for it, then I guess somebody told you to do it. So we did it and whatever. So we spend the next, 7 days clearing that city?
Yeah.
I can't remember. We get to Way City and we're doing an EDL with Staff Sergeant Hart. And lo and behold, we're missing a PAS 13. And Hart doesn't know anything that this guy is saying is true. Like, where did you get this from? And he immediately blames me. And he's just taking it out on me. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to take this. I'm going to see how long this goes. And Samuel was wanting to speak up and take up. And I was like, no. Let's just eat this and see how long it goes. Let's have fun with it. Talbot saw the crap that went on around that. I got the squad. We weren't allowed to go out on patrols. They sent us back to ING, which has been blown up and dropped to the ground. So they made us go out there and like flip rocks for 3 days trying to find this thing in the rubble.
Jesus.
Couldn't find it. Yeah. It was all kinds of crap going on. So like we still couldn't patrol. Finally, I'm sure I had a bad attitude about it towards the end of those 10, 14, 15, 20 days, whatever it was. But this guy comes to me and he's, hey, I was talking to Staff Sergeant and the LT, and they're like, hey, it's a general consensus that your attitude sucks. And I was like, I lost it. I went nuts on this guy. When Wilcox is actually the one that stepped out and saved me from doing something stupid. But I went so berserk on the dude that what chain of command we did have there, they saw how serious I was. And it was at that point they realized that Gaddis wasn't lying. There was nothing he did wrong. So then there was another incident like 2 weeks after that. You guys remember when we got when we were in Al-Qaim, they gave us the anti-armor plates. So we switched them out.
Yeah.
We had an extra set of plates in our bag. The interpreter we had, he was walking around in a Vietnam-style flak jacket. The big old neck collar one.
Yep.
So this guy we're talking about felt bad for him, so gave him one of his extra plate carriers and put his old sappies in it. This cat went on leave to Iraq or Baghdad and never came back. So then I get accused of throwing this dude's sappy plates in the fire. Next thing I know, I got NCIS and lawyers and shit coming out interviewing me. And the only thing that saved my butt is Wilcox and those guys had gotten together and basically wrote statements all individually.
Holy shit, dude.
And I didn't even know that it happened. So I'm sitting there getting my rights read to me. And the lieutenant was like, I'm going to tell you what's going to save you. And he throws down this stack of loose papers. And he's like, I got X amount of statements from your entire platoon that says this is what happened. But yeah, I know what a PAS 13 is.
So you know what's funny? I wouldn't even I totally forgot that thing even existed, and I wouldn't even have brought it up if it wasn't for that conversation with Strong last night.
I'll throw this in there about the guy one more time. We're leaving. We're in Kuwait. We're going home. They had sent this guy up north to get away from the platoon because it was not good mojo. It's time to go home, and we're in Kuwait. And we got there late night, and I was so tired, but I was like sitting on this cot in this K-span trying to figure out what I was going to go do at 3 a.m. I'm like, I'm not tired, but I'm tired. What do I do? I'm hungry. And one of the corpsmen that was friends with this guy, he goes and tells me, he's like, hey, I think Gaddis is like contemplating something serious. He looks suicidal in there. So this guy freaks out, and he goes and tells the chaplain and all this stuff. And next thing I know, they're taking my weapon from me. And I'm like, what the hell? The battalion commander finds out about it, and he's like, nah, screw that. Give his weapon back. Matter of fact, he's the guardian angel tomorrow on the bus. Give him a rack of ammo. So I was the guy that got to walk around with bullets, and this dude thinks I'm going to shoot him or something. I have no idea where this stuff came from, but I was like the happiest guy ever. I don't understand it.
Dude, you just crazy. It's such a crazy fucking story. I won't tell it on here, but I'll have to tell you guys a story about that guy that I feel like I'm one of the only fucking people that knows. And when the story got told to me, I was like, holy fuck, dude. It was like one of the craziest things I ever heard.
I wouldn't doubt it. It sucked because that was my last raw with those guys, with Talbot and Tiernan and Hamlet and Lybrook. And
yeah,
he really tainted it, man. If it wasn't for Talbot and those guys, like I probably wouldn't have made it through as happy as I was.
Dude, that's crazy. I didn't even know any of that shit.
Yeah. We still had fun.
Fucking, it must have been Carrie and them and Hunter's team that brought NCIS out, because I sure as fuck wasn't a part of that.
It was so stupid, dude. I basically had a court martial coming my way, and if it wasn't for these guys and their statements, I had to defend myself somehow. I don't know.
But, yeah, dude, that's fucking wild, man.
Situation. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I ain't got nothing, dude. I don't know, like, how the fuck can you even try to top some shit like that? You know?
Actually, I'll tell you a story. It has to do with Ramirez. This is Cuba. I'm sure you've heard numerous stories about Cuba, but, like, they were called MOPS, the Marine On Post. And the towers were strategically placed, like, 3 miles apart. I think that was the rule of thumb, wasn't it, Talbot?
Something like that.
Yeah, so, like, you had leeward and windward in the river.
Or at least that far apart, I felt.
Yeah. Leeward and windward, and the Guantanamo Bay split the two in half. So you had 3 Marines on one side standing post at one time and 3 on the other. If you're on the last post of the morning, you could see the Humvee coming. It'd still take an hour for that truck to get to you. So you had time. Damn. It was a salt flat. It was awful. So Ramirez was my COG, and Flynn was the driver. And so he would come out, drop us off, and then he'd be like, hey, it's 4:30. I'm going to go to the chow. What do you want for breakfast? And I was like, man, I want eggs, some chocolate milk, and toast. I'm not going to get that breakfast till noon. But so he brings back out, and I'm eating my food or whatever, and I turn up my chocolate milk, and there's something rattling in the cup. I'm like, what the fuck is that? So I killed it, and I look in the bottom. He done put X-Lax in my chocolate milk. And I was laughing about it. I was like, all right. So I called him on the phone. I said, this is funny. But if I call you, you better get back out here, because you weren't allowed to leave the tower unless you had somebody up there.
Sure.
There was a little porta potty down at the bottom of the tower.
I'm freaking out. I'm like, dude, I know it's going to hit me out of nowhere, and I'm not going to have time to call this dude. Sure enough, it hit me. I called him. I said, dude, you better get your ass out here right now. We're down here washing the Humvees, man. You got to wait. I was like, I'm not fucking waiting. You got to hurry. He didn't hurry. So I'm like freaking out. I see the truck coming. It's still an hour away. So I'm like going through my mind, like, how am I going to take care of this? And before this actually happened, we had an incident with a Marine. Same problem. On the other side of the island, he decided to do his business in a food tray. And he went to fling it out of the post. And when he did, it went back and it stuck to the side of the post. Now, the problem is the side of that post is an American flag.
Okay, so somebody was just texting about that. Maybe so it was you not long ago.
That's going in my mind. I'm like, dude, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So underneath our table, we had the ginormous Coast Guard med kit. I'm like, dude, I bet there's good gauze in there. I got this. So I open it up and there's like these elbow big gloves. Yeah, I'll put it in the glove. So I start going. It didn't hit me in my mind when I was doing it, but it's X-lax, so this stuff's gonna be straight water. So like I go to do it, fingers just start filling up. I'm like, fuck. So I tied it up like a balloon. I'm like, Ramirez shows up. He's like, all right, man, come on down. I was like, you're too late. He's like, what? And I just threw it out the window. And it hits the ground. This thing. And Ramirez couldn't be mad. He's like, I did that. That was my fault.
Dude, you should have dropped that thing right on the hump. Either
I they thought just about got done. It. Oh my God, dude. But they had just washed it too. And I was like, ah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he got me. I got him back.
They got to drive back in a shit covered hump.
Right. Yeah. Oh, Ramirez.
Oh, dude. Yeah, that guy's awesome, man.
He is. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it's crazy. 40 minutes already gone by. I do want to shoot over real quick to talking about some of the stuff that you got going on, Matt. Just because if we don't do it now, I feel like shit covered Humvees is a good segue. If we don't get it done now, we won't get it done.
That I could share, but we don't. These are probably more important issues.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
We'll
don't be sorry at all, Jeff. Like I said, if we had the time, I would share mine too. Everyone wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
The best part, again, man, like me moving down here, soon when I got down here, Ramirez and I linked up, and then just with the group text and the reunion and the podcast and everything, that's whatever. He's dude, you got to reach out to Talbot. He's helping me with my shit. Have him on the podcast to talk about DVA, DAV, whatever the fuck it is. I can't remember. Yeah. Fucking. But so tell us what you're up to now with that.
Yeah, so I've been there a little under a year now. When I got out, I did a lot of different jobs between then and now. Never settled on anything. Didn't know what I wanted to do. And then just asked myself, what would give me fulfillment? What do I enjoy to do at this point? And it's like this. It's talking with vets, hearing their stories, and trying to help them out in any way possible. That's what gives me fulfillment these days, aside from my family. But of course. But
right.
I went back to school, got my degree, went and looked for a job where I could helping veterans, and just luck of the draw, like I got in touch with the right people. They hooked me up with this job, so here I am. And so what I do primarily is we deal with veterans compensation and pension, or what they call dependency and indemnity compensation, right? Like spouse benefits for when the service member passes. If they have a certain status with their compensation, they may be eligible for benefits, all that kind of stuff. Even a little bit of we help with the application for education, like VR&E benefits, which is the Veteran Readiness and Employment. Used to be Voc Rehab, they called it. So just how I've interpreted the VA claim process, right? So basically, there's five ways that you can get a condition that you feel is related to your service, right? Service connected, as they say, right? So there's one, there's a presumptive condition, right? Like I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with the PACT Act that was just passed recently, that and it lists for the Vietnam era and the post 9/11 era, or Gulf War until through 9/11, a list of presumptive conditions, right? Where they've determined for Vietnam it was the Agent Orange exposure. For our generation, or from the Gulf era on, the burn pit issue is a big topic. And exposure potentially even to the Camp Lejeune water. So if you have a presumptive condition on one of those lists and you meet the criteria for that presumptive condition, then you can get granted service connection that way. There's a traditional way of, right, they determine a direct service connection, meaning they found evidence in your service treatment record of what you're claiming with the condition you're claiming. So they're saying that they see evidence of treatment or a diagnosis of whatever condition you're filing for in your service treatment record, right? Which are the records that you had while you're in the service. Certain things, if they're diagnosed within a year of getting out, or there's evidence of the condition within that year of getting out of the military, they'll consider those possibly as presumptive, right? Not everything, but some stuff. The other way is if you had a pre-existing injury before you came into the military, right? And you can prove that your service time aggravated that pre-existing condition, you can get it that way. Actually, through like a VR&E program, right? Or if you're injured at the VA, you could also get service-connected disability that way. But the main ones we deal with are direct service connection or through a presumptive condition or even aggravation of a pre-existing injury. Those are the most common ones we see. So like I said, I'll give you a synopsis of how to get a claim granted. So basically, short of having any in-service documentation, right, like I alluded to, if you don't have any evidence of what you're claiming in your service treatment record, the VA is going to, from their standpoint, they're saying there's no evidence that this condition is related to your service time.
Right.
So short of that, which my biggest issue with this process is, if I were to ask you, if I were to ask Jeff, when you were in the Marine Corps, how was it looked at if you twisted your ankle or you had knee pain or you had back pain, how was it looked at for you to go to sick call and get that checked out?
Yeah, you don't. You don't do it. Yeah.
And from the general consensus of the people, the vets I've interacted with up till this point, is that the situation was similar to them, where unless it was broken or hanging off, like you just didn't go and get it looked at. You didn't complain about it because you would be labeled, right? We all know what those labels are.
Yeah.
So anyway, so short of having, and like I said, that's a problem for a lot of vets that I'm seeing, probably all of us on this chat, right? So in absence of that documentation, right, the only way we're able to get these claims passed is through a medical opinion, right? And this is an element that has drawn a lot of contention in this atmosphere, right, in the veteran compensation arena. With us at the DAV, we take the standpoint as these are earned benefits for veterans, right? You're entitled to these benefits. We're of the opinion that you shouldn't have to pay anything to obtain these benefits, right? But what's happened is because of this situation, right? If you don't have the documentation of in-service treatment or diagnosis, the only way that you can get it, right? Because the VA is going to send you to an exam, they're going to provide a medical opinion, right, from that examination. If it's a negative opinion, right, they deny the service connection, the only way you can prove it, short of that record, right, is a medical opinion from your own doctor, right? If you have two conflicting opinions, it's what they call equipoise, and it's almost like tie goes to the runner. They're supposed to rule in favor of the veteran, right? Now, not all statements carry the equal weight through the VA. I can't define how they measure the weight of one opinion from the other. The bottom line is it has to be a licensed practitioner that you get this statement from, right? This medical opinion. And the problem is a lot of these vets, they're in this position, right? And they approach their doctor, right? Whether through the VA or on the private side, and they ask for an opinion, right? Hey, can you look at my file? This is my record of my in-service stuff. This is from my medical history from post-military. This is what I'm exposed to. This is the injury. In your opinion, is it at least as likely, meaning 50-50, that it's related to my service time? And if so, would you provide me a statement alluding to that fact? Some doctors will give that, some won't. So it's a roll of dice between your own personal provider, whether they do it or not. If they don't, you're still in the same position. You still need that medical opinion, right? And what's happened because of this, right? A lot of people know this situation. They started making businesses from it. And some of them are for profit, right? Which is fine. I don't have any disagreement with, you know, starting a for-profit business, right? That's what we all need to do, is feed ourselves. But like I said, it's a problem that should be being addressed so it doesn't get to that point. And it hasn't been, right? And so here we are, right? And some of these groups, they deal solely with what they say, right? They're straight up. They're saying, hey, we're just going to connect you with a doctor. We're going to get you that opinion. And that's the end of the story. Some of them, they're taking advantage of vets that don't know any better. And they're writing in the fine print, like any future entitlement that you receive from the VA, we're entitled to a portion of.
Yep.
And this is what the problem is.
So if someone out there, everybody out there, it's not if. So if they're dealing with something like, say, that the VA denied their claim, what would be your advice for next steps? And then also another part of that question, are there any websites or resources or things that people can go to and learn more and try to at least take steps prior to? Because everybody always tells me, oh, I have a lawyer that did this or a guy that did this, and they take half of it or whatever. But steps, advice, guidance that you have prior to having to go to somebody like that.
Yeah, first and foremost, I would recommend that you don't deal with your claim on your own or deal directly with the VA to work with you on behalf of your claim, because they just don't have the time. Like, they're not working in your best interest. I would recommend going to an accredited veteran service officer, be it the DAV, be it the American Legion, whoever's closest to you, whatever your situation, so that at least that person has an understanding of the process and the intricacies of the process. Like I said, depending on every time you get a decision from the VA, right? So you filed the claim, it got processed, you got a decision letter in the mail telling you whether you were awarded benefit or not. Depending on the nowadays, all those decisions, they state why you were denied or you were granted.
Okay.
And list all the evidence that they use to make that determination. There's a lot of different aspects from that letter that a service officer can look at and use to reapproach the claim, right? So whether it be you need to get additional like documentation or you need a medical opinion, right? What we typically recommend, what I recommend is to do, depending on the situation, but if you get denied and they're saying it's because you had lack of evidence or that there was a unfavorable medical opinion from the VA examiner, what I would do is file a supplemental claim for that. It's almost like a low-level review. And if you would add the additional information that they didn't have originally when they decided the claim, then at that point, they may be able to rule in your favor.
So yeah.
We always suggest to start at the lower level, a supplemental claim. If that doesn't work, you work your way up to a higher level review. If that doesn't work, you file an appeal on the claim. And it's all, the reason we suggest it that way is a supplemental claim is developed just like a traditional claim. Same time frame, typically like 4 to 6 months to resolve. Higher level reviews take a little bit longer. Appeals could take years. So
yeah.
Vets, they do these things without guidance from the representative, and they get halfway through this process and everything's jumbled up and confused. And then they turn to their service officer and ask for help. And then you have to go back and figure out what was going on to begin with. You're better off just getting the advice early on. That would probably be the biggest thing I would say is just, and if you do sign up to be represented by one of these organizations, seek their advice. And whenever you're trying to file anything with the claim process, or it's much easier to do it from the start. So.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's great stuff, man. We haven't had anybody on to talk about that. And there's a lot of people out there that are working through the things that they're working through right now.
Don't be ashamed. Like I said, I hear all the time, I didn't say anything for a long time because I'm intact and there's all these guys out there that are missing legs and whatnot. And you're not stealing benefits from anybody else. Just take a look, just read a news article. You'll see how much money the government wastes. Don't feel like you're wasting the government's money or the taxpayer money. These are benefits that if you have a condition and it's related to service, you're entitled to a benefit for that. Mm-hmm. So
for sure.
Don't feel ashamed for reaching out, especially for things are tight right now for a lot of people who couldn't benefit from a little bit of extra income if you deserve it. So don't feel ashamed about that.
Dude, especially down here in Florida, man, like I think all states have different things down here. Like you don't have to pay personal property tax if you're 100%. And dude, my personal property tax is like $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
My wife's, the fuck's wrong with you? You could like save us 12 grand a year. Yeah. You're fucked up. Go get compensated for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, now it's something that like probably a lot of us, Garavito and I were both talking not long ago. And that's actually what made me text you that day. It was because him and I were talking and we were talking about our percentages. And I was like, fuck, man, somebody told me that I think it's Talbot I need to get in touch with. Yeah, for everybody listening, man, they can reach out. I don't know. Are you on Facebook?
No, I'm not on social media.
They can reach out to me. They can reach out to Gaddis, a number of us. We've got your number. We can put people in touch with you. And if they need some help or direction or guidance.
Like I said, like we have offices all over the country, every state. It's just a matter of Googling your local DAV office or whatever brand or organization you want to use.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different organizations out there that do the same thing. So sometimes it's a matter of convenience where you're located. So
I wish I would have had Matt Talbot when I did mine, because I tried to find any sort of verbal resource and I couldn't. It dropped away. It was just like, whatever, there's another guy asking for help. But
the process isn't.
Yeah, it's jacked up. And like Steps and Taps tells you nothing.
Right. Dude, yeah.
Nothing.
It's crazy, right?
Like, gotten better.
I can't tell speak people for now, but this is, yeah. But
I always tell people to go through.
I just kept doing it on my own and reading. And I was like, the one thing I did learn is if you just stay persistent with the VA and just keep doing it, eventually, whether they get tired of you, I don't know how it works, but I just kept going after it. And finally, I stalled out. And I came across this company, and sure enough, I saw two guys that used it. It worked. I did it, and boom. But I did get myself to a decent level and finally getting appointments to be seen. But no, it was ridiculous how hard it was just to get an appointment.
It's a long game.
Yeah. Yeah, it is crazy, man. My last experience with the VA was decent because I had to have immediate emergency hernia surgery. You know? But if it's not an emergency,
right,
where it's something that's like potentially life or death, we'll see in 6 months. And that's, you know what? And I know we got to wrap up here soon, but that's something, Matt, when we talked on the phone, a very clear distinction that a lot of people don't know is that VA, just because you have problems with the VA healthcare, is a separate entity of sorts, right? There's three different branches. It's a different branch than VA benefits. Just if you're like, oh man, you know, like fuck the VA or whatever, the healthcare side is different than the benefit side. So
yeah, I tell you ought to try to get in touch with Cashmar.
Yeah.
He's up here where I'm at, but he's a fill-in, but he's like the deputy director to the Veteran Affairs.
Oh shit.
Up in DC. Yeah, he's
I love the talking.
He's big time. But I was down here coaching football, youth football, and this guy come up and slung his arm over me, and it was Cashmar.
Wow. No shit.
Oh crap. And he's like, yeah, I live down here, man. And then next thing I know, he's telling me he's up at the VA, is like basically acting as the director of the Veteran Affairs out of DC.
Damn.
He's I'm sure that guy's got a slew of knowledge.
I'd love to pick his brain. Yeah, absolutely.
And he had some injuries himself in his next unit. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's whenever Sylvester Lum and him like cross decked over.
Yep.
Yeah.
But no, he's doing good. It seems, but I'm sure that guy's got all kinds of stuff to tell y'all about this.
Yeah. I'll have to get up with him. He did a weird, I don't even know if Facebook has it anymore, but like Facebook rooms. Some weird thing popped up and it's like, Cashmar invited you, and I go in and it's like him and a couple other people. It was almost like a Facebook Messenger group call.
Oh yeah.
Like we had the other night, but it was, I don't know, man, it's weird shit. Facebook does a lot of weird ass shit. So with that said, you said, we got one more quick story for,
man, I don't have just one. It's like,
I know there's so many more I got to go, but
I know, man. And that's what I was like sitting here thinking, because my biggest thing I was going to bring up, like coming up to Hawaii City. And dude, I swear to God, like, every time I came there and walked in, like you guys, because it was a school building, right?
Yeah. A rec,
right?
The old rec center. Yeah.
Okay. There was that first area when you walk in. And I swear to God, every time I walked in, it was just like all the fucking Iraqis sitting in a circle looking at porn. Like just one dude had the magazine, and there's just like, and I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Every time I show up here, there's a circle of Iraqis just like reading a porno.
Yep.
They loved it. They're like, dude, where are you stationed? Fucking, oh, dude, I'm at Beirut. Oh, dude, Hawaii City, that's the place.
That's the place. Yeah.
The Americans guy.
We had the CAD group with us, so we had power.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, those Beirut dudes.
And we had good Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
No, dude, I got to see, obviously, being in the trucks driving to the different places, and those poor dudes in Beirut.
Macron is living.
And then I roll up to your guys' place, and it's like the fucking Ritz.
Oh, yeah. We were living large.
I remember we were on foot patrol. We went down to the train station, and everybody just had this death look on them. What's wrong? Like, our entire complex that we built just collapsed. So we got to rebuild the whole thing before we can go to sleep. The whole roof had fallen in on the train station. Not us.
Yeah, what a horrible fucking place. There wasn't a better place to fucking establish a BP. That place, there was nothing secure about that location. It was just horrible.
No,
so horrible.
Yeah, what?
Looking back, like, it was exposed. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey guys, here's this fucking passenger platform and just have at it. Build shit. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yep. Yeah. Guys, we got to wrap it up. I appreciate you coming on. We're going to definitely have to do this again. We're going to have a part two because there's so much more. There's so much many stories to tell.
Yeah, we got a lot of funny stuff that we never even got to.
I'm just glad that the channel went from PG-13 to us. Like, we can finally talk. Like, I was the first ones were laying low on what you could say and couldn't say. And then some of the guys started coming in, pressing the threshold. I was like, all right, cool, we're good. I was so nervous about coming on this thing. I was like, I want to say something crazy.
No, I think the bar's already been set pretty high.
Yeah, so. We're good.
Yeah. Dude, like I said, man, I know what? If you guys got a second, I'll do like a group call after this.
Yeah.
And tell you that fucking story.
Yeah.
That's the bar. That's, you'll know the threshold. If there's something I'm not willing to talk about,
gotcha.
It's pretty fucking crazy. So, yeah. Definitely. I'll have to give you guys a... Actually, no, I don't. We're just going to stop recording and then I'll tell you what the fuck I'm talking about. We're already on a call. I'm fucking stupid. With that said, guys, we love you all, man. We appreciate the support. It's been incredible. And check us out, Spotify, Apple, which you already are. You're on one of those two listening to us already. 5-star reviews. Keep them coming. We appreciate it. And we'll catch you next time. Simplify.